Hello, everyone. This is a joint work with my student, Yuehai, and we are from Wayne State University. In this talk, I'm going to talk about a new scheduling framework that can make any disk scheduler non-working serving solely based on the request characteristics. In today's storage industry, the hard disk is being changed by emerging storage devices such as SSD, but hard disk is still maintaining its age on cost effectiveness with its ever-increasing capacity and peak throughput. And the disk performance with long sequential access is critical for the disk to be competitive, in particular in virtual machine environment and for consolidated storage system data center. And the disk effective performance depends on exploration or special locality. Special locality describes how close requests arriving in a short period of time are close. Traditionally, this locality is exploited statically in the request scheduling, or only requests that have been arrived are considered for scheduling. And in this work, we are going to exploit it in both space and time dimensions. When a disk serves a non-sequential request, it spends rotation time and disk seek time. If you assume that planetary rotation time uniformly distributed, and it is disk seek time that actually determines the service time. And because scheduler does not know the internal disk layout, so usually assume that the data requests are uniform, are distributed in this space dimension, linear space dimension. And the distance between the current disk head position and the request position and basically highly correlated to the service time. And we use this logical block number address to measure the distance or on this linear space. And usually, when a disk scheduler usually just select a request closest to the current disk head position to minimize the service time. And if the scheduler selects such a request only from pending request, it is a working serving scheduler. And here you see that just minimize the T1, which is the service time for pending request. So it exploits the locality only in this space dimension, or only one dimension locality exploited. By stating 2D dimension or 2D locality, we actually mean that a future request that has not yet arrived and anticipated to arrive were also considered for scheduling. If a scheduler consider a future request in scheduling, this is a long working serving scheduler. For future requests, there are two time components associated with it. One is the service time. One is the wait time, which is T2, from the current time to its arrival time. Another one is service time. That's the service time for the new request, future request, T3, if the disk head wait to serve the request. To exploit 2D locality, the disk scheduler need to select a request whose time is minimal among all T1s and T2 plus T3 to exploit the locality. Okay? And it is pretty straightforward to get T1. You just use a working serving scheduler and find a request that has minimal T1. However, for T2 and T3, we need to predict if there is a future request whose T2 plus T3 less than T1. And if we represent this inequality, T2 plus T3 less than T1, using this mushroom-shaped area. And this area centered as a current disk head position and whose size is determined by T1. If there is a future request arriving in this mushroom area, the disk should stay there, does not dispatch any pending request and wait for future request. However, if the clock time passes over the tip of this mushroom area without seeing any future request, and then the disk basically wasted time by being idle. So there is a risk associated with scheduling a future request. So it's important for us to determine what request history information should be used for an accurate prediction. Okay, let's see how the current, the anticipatory scheduler, which has been the default Linux scheduler, today's Linux default scheduler is CFQ, which is also a long-conserving scheduler. Let's see how AS deal with this work, handle this work. The AS groups requests according to the issuing processes. So they use the requests that belongs to the same processes, use their history to predict the next request that belongs to the same process. And and also, AS explicitly track request arrive times and locations for each process to make a prediction for the next request, or the try to track the previous T2 and the T3s to predict the next T2 or T3. And what's the problem with that? First, requests in a local disk area may be issued by different processes. So separating these processes into different groups may fail to recognize the full strength of the locality. The second, maintaining and analyzing long history access information statistics can be expensive. You need to maybe remember a lot of T2s and T3s for analysis. And third, but not last, the process information may be available. In a virtual machine environment, hypervisor or host domain cannot see processes running on each individual virtual machine. And some or hard disk array, they just have their own internal disk scheduler, which cannot see processes running on the host through their block level interface. And for NFS, PVFS, Lustre, these file system, parallel file system, they just never know from which process is running on the client side is actually send a particular request. So AS, anti-stack battery scheduler, which actually has been deemed very effective, may essentially degenerate into a work conserving scheduler without knowing this process information. And there are some idea approaches or some work try to remedy this problem. AntFarm, which is a facility, tries to infer process information in a virtual machine environment monitor by tracking activities or processes in guest virtual machine. And however, the application of this method is only limited to virtual machine. And efforts must be paid to implement this facility for each individual virtual machine system. And the system must be open for instrumentation and patching. In another work, hints such as access files directory or owners are used for grouping requests in the NF servers. But hints may not be always relevant. And the prefetcher designers sometimes face a similar problem. Then you also need to group history access information to decide if the current prefetching should proceed. And the Linux prefetching policy, just doing this by tracking file accesses for every process that open the file. But here, the file abstraction may not be available. And the method that used for prefetching, that is efficient tracking and decision-making mechanism used there, can be leveraged in our design, which I'm going to detail in the next several slides. So we designed these string scheduling. It's a framework in which process information is not required in any way. It only tracks request characteristics, and that is request arrive time and locations for analysis. And it does not introduce minimal overhead by remembering minimal history information and conducting minimal computation. And it is able to be integrated seamlessly with any work conserving schedulers, as it designed as a framework to make them non work conserving. And in this design, the scheduler SS group requests into strings according to their locality, so that the intra-string locality is stronger than the inter-string locality. This is achieved by tracking judicious scheduling decision, which is dictated by the inequality, T2 plus T3 less than T1. If the inequality holds, it wait for a future request. If it's not, it does not hold, it will not wait and immediately pay dispatch pending request. And a string is defined in this way. A string is a sequence of requests for which judicial decision are wait. So the rationale of this design is that if we see in the past several past contiguous decision, judicial decision are all to wait, it is high likelihood that the next judicial decision will also be wait. So we get a clue how to schedule the next future, if we should wait for the next future request. And a string is maintained like the Linux prefetching policy. A string is built up or tore down or depending on next judicial decision, just like prefetching string, which is actually behave just like is maintained according to if there is a next access hit on the string. And now let's just use an example, run example to illustrate how SS works. Okay, say the request A now is completed. And at this time, we don't have good reason to wait here for future request. So it moved to serve a future request, a pending request, which is determined by, identified by a working serving scheduler. And B arrived outside the mushroom. So which means that the judicial decision one made when A is completed should be not wait. And then one is completed, and then it moved to serve request B. Okay, now request 2 arrives. Arrived in request 1's mushroom. Now we say that request 1 has a child, and we see a string whose size is 2, including request 1 and request 2. Okay, B is done. Then it moved to serve request 2. And then C arrives, still outside the mushroom, so no string there. 2 is completed, okay? And at this time, we still don't have sufficient confidence that we are going to see a future request in 2's mushroom. So we move to serve the pending request, C. Okay? Request 2 says child, okay? So the string is extended to a size 3. And C is done, and then move to serve pending request 3, okay? Another request outside the mushroom, so no string for ABCD. But now we have a string 1, 2, 3. And 3 is done. Now we know that, pretty confident, we are going to see a string. And we define a system parameter, which basically determined if the current string can be considered established. Say with the parameter is 3. So the string is established. For a tablet string, we're going to let the diskette wait there for future request. And we are confident, okay, there is a future request in 3's mushroom. Now we have a string, and we use a string to continuously schedule future request. And now the disk can be efficiently continuously serve request from the string without moving away from the string. The disk can be efficiently used. Okay, now let's see how the string is maintained. A string grows when a complete request sees child, which means that the judicial decision is to wait. And determining existence of a child is independent of actual scheduling, because the actual scheduling decision, whether the actual scheduling decision is in line with the judicial decision, the string anyway will be extended as long as there is a future request which is actually falling into that mushroom, okay? Or the string will see its next child. And a string established when its size or its length exceeds a threshold. And an established string leads to a long working serving scheduling. And the scheduler stops serving a request, a string, when the string is broken or the time slice allocated to the string runs out. So basically, we schedule the disk among the several, rotate its access, the service among several strings in a time by times manner. Or an urgent request appears, such as a request that passed its deadline. So in this way, we can make avoid starvation, or the fairness issue can be addressed here. And to maintain a string, only current string lengths need to be remembered. So the cost is trivial, is minimal. We don't need to analyze any T2 or T3, this history information. And we also have the design of string scheduling for disk array, that is to coordinate the strings that has been formed or created for each individual disks in a disk array. And the details would be for this will be described in the paper, and you're welcome to check it out. And the experiments, software setting, we implement these in Linux kernel, and we put the deadline scheduler as its work conserving component. And the default string length threshold is 4, and the default time slice here is 124 milliseconds. And we have sensitivity on these parameters in the paper. And this is hardware. And here, for the implementation, we actually adapted the design of SS because the current disk usually allow multiple outstanding requests in it, and that is scheduled by NCQ. So with this, we cannot just use the most recently completed request to indicate a disk head position. So instead now, we just use the last request sent to the disk to indicate the current head position. And we use this approximation, and it just shows it works well. It works well in our experiment. And now, let's first see the storage without process information. We just intentionally remove the process information from the request. And we use these four benchmarks. The PAR read is just the benchmark of four independent processes, each reading 1 gigabyte file. And the GRIP, we want 2 GRIP instances. And TPCH, we want 3 TPCH instances, each has its own data set. And the postmark, 4 postmark instances. And the result you see here is actually normalized to the performance of loop. Loop is an Linux scheduler, which it just does nothing. It just simply dispatch any request it received, and it does nothing beyond merging contiguous request. And for now, let's first see for the GRIP and the postmark. These two benchmarks actually issue synchronous random request. And without knowing process information, CFQ or S basically just treat these requests all from the same processes. So it just cannot take advantage of long working serving scheduling and the dispatch. It just move disk head around. So its performance is as worse as that of deadline or loop. For the PAR, interestingly, for the other two benchmarks, PAR read and TPCH, which actually issue sequential requests and generate, of course, a lot of asynchronous prefetching requests, we can see that the deadline and the loop do not do well. And the reason is that because there is a request merging by scheduler and the requests are standing or pending within the disk, there's still a time period when the disk just cannot see any pending request from a process. And in all these experiments, we can see that SS significantly improved the performance. And something I need to be noted that if we make the process information available in this experiment to CS, AS, or CFQ, their performance would be similar to that as that of SS. Okay, now let's just see the performance of the request response time distribution for the PAR read benchmark. And now you can see that there are two components in a response time. One is pending time, that is from arrival time to its dispatch time. The other time is service time, from dispatch time to its completion time. Right? And unsurprisingly, we see that the SS string scheduler is actually compared with deadline. You can see that it's caused some variation, bigger variation of pending time. It generates a relatively substantially large pending time. And this is because that it rotates its accesses among several, four strings. But this kind of request of high pending time is relatively small, and the percentage is a very small percentage. And you can see that most of the requests is actually get their pending time significantly reduced. And this kind of, if you look at the service time, you can see that the higher variation of pending time is actually well paid off. You see that the service time for the SS is much slower than deadline. So the disk actually can be more efficiently used. Okay, now let's just see the storage with inadequate or misleading process information. We have 4 benchmarks, multi-threads. We have 4 processes, each forking 2 processes for sequentially reading files. But between these 2 threads, there are periodical synchronization. Another one is MPI-IO test, which is an MPI program. And we are running it on the PVFS2. And another is FTP server, TPCH. We want 3 TPCH instance. And you can see here, we just get it larger. And for the multi-threads, you can see that the SS actually more than double the performance of S or deadline or loop. But S and CFQ, their performance is even worse than deadline and the loop. And the reason is that S and CFQ stick to a schedule request from each individual thread. And if these threads constantly coordinate with synchronize with each other, the S or CFQ will suffer the failed anticipation. By contrast, you would say SS is not constrained by this synchronization, and it can just dispatch any request nearby, no matter which processes or threads belong to. And for the second, for the MPI IO test, for this one, this is actually an MPI program running on a cluster with four compute nodes and eight data servers, and the data file are striped over these eight data servers. And on each data server, the request from the same program instance is actually a higher locality, and SS just can exploit this locality and provide a throughput improvement of about 87%. But if you see the CFQ and AS, it's actually they cannot. The reason is that there's a daemon in each data server that just receive request from the client. And then it randomly select a thread to dispatch these requests to the kernel. So the AS or CFQ basically just see random process numbers attached to each individual, each request. So it can hardly find any locality within among process requests issued by the same thread. And now let's just see for the virtual machine case. If we just run one virtual machine, and you will see that the SS can significantly improve performance, but the S and the CFQ, just minimal, very limited improvement. And the reason is that within one virtual machine, the S and CFQ just cannot see, distinguish the request that issued by processes running on the same process, running on the same virtual machine, but SS can. And if we use two virtual machines, and each virtual machine has the same setting as that in the one virtual machine case, and then you will see that the S or CFQ has a better, higher improvement, and the reason is it can distinguish, differentiate requests issued by different virtual machines, and now can avoid the diskette 6. Or minimize or reduce this 6 among requests from different virtual machines. And accordingly, the performance advantage of SS is reduced. Okay, now it comes to the conclusions. So the string scheduling framework can turn a disk scheduler into a long working serving scheduler, and the cost is minimal, very small. And the framework can also extend disk arrays to recover and exploit the locality weakened by file striping, and our experiments just show that it's very effective. Now I'm glad to take your questions. Thank you.
So you defined two different times, right? Like one is the wait time and then the other is the service time.
Yes.
As far as the client is concerned, it's the total of the two that matters, right? Because as far as they see, that's the IO turnaround time.
I'm sorry, could you say the question again?
So the client to the block device sees the combination of the wait time and the service time, right?
Yes, there are two components for future requests.
Yeah. And then it gets issued to disk and then comes back. Okay, so you're saving service time, which is great, right? But because there's a variation in wait time that's introduced, because sometimes it's your stream is being prioritized, sometimes somebody else's stream is being prioritized, so you're stuck in the queue, right? So then the total time will have more variation. Right.
Yes.
The total turnaround time will have more variation.
Yeah, the variation basically reflected on the pending time. Because one string is being serving, its pending time is small. But it is not its turn. It is this string's turn for it to be served, and then it will wait a longer time. Yes.
So I think this characteristic is acceptable for like TPCH, so those kind of workloads.
Okay.
But for OLTP type workloads, I'm not sure if it'll work.
In a slide, I actually have this kind of mechanism building out there. that if you want some like fairness or some QS that want to enforce in this scheduling policy, you can attach a priority or whatever to a particular bunch of requests. And then the string scheduling will respect that. So immediately say the deadline is passed and it will switch, immediately serve that request. So if you think that there, in that case, this policy will be, or design will be adapted.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Arkady Kanevsky, VMware. I have a question for you. When you, how well is the stream scheduling scales out with the number of streams it sees?
I mean, basically in terms of the pending time, right? If
well,
you
the,
have
the pending time, pending time, how many streams it can, you know, it can,
it can handle.
It can handle, and how much impact as the number of streams increases will be on the latency for each individual stream. I would assume the overall queue length seems to be decreasing because now you're processing the request faster because they're grouped together.
Yes.
But you know the discrepancy across the streams becomes a little bit higher. So trying to get some kind of feel for how much. Impact will be as you increase the number of streams.
This kind of dedicated a service to one string at a time. So the number of string become larger and larger, and then for a string to get shared, the wait for could be a long time, right? And this is actually, if this is an issue, that would be the issue with also current CFQ, this kind of scheduler. Mm-hmm. And we can, if this is there's no good solution for this. Maybe for if there is a very high QS requirement, performance requirement at that time, maybe that will be solution like use multiple disks. You have multiple disk heads, right, to serve different requests. Otherwise, I mean, the performance. Anyway, if you use a syscan or whatever request in that time, anyway, the latency will be increased. This is not just an issue unique to the string scheduling. Yeah.
Vasily Tarasov, Stony Brook University. So I wonder, what was the longest size of the queue you have experimented with, and how, in general, your performance scales as the queue length grows?
What queue do you refer to?
I mean, so basically, it looks like you had, in one of experiments at least, you had four processes, each forking two threads. So in total, you had 8 contexts. Means the queue, operating system, IO queue, was just only...
Mean string.
But NFS, for example, NFS servers, we have large queues, like 256 requests and so on, right?
Yes. But here is actually, we are not using one NFS server to serve multiple string. We actually, each NFS server serves only one client. And then in one virtual machine, we have multiple NFS servers. The reason for that is current NFS server is actually enforce some kind of synchronization. It just send a request, dispatch request. Before it get it served, it does not serve dispatch another request. So there's no asynchronous or pending requests out there for our string scheduler to take advantage of. That's the reason we use multiple NFS server. Yeah, not single one, yeah.
Hi, I'm Rusty Sears from Yahoo Research. I have a question about the TPCH experiments.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you tried running them without removing the process information, because the database could be trying to group requests according to process ID for you, or it could be that your scheduler works in the vanilla case because the database isn't smart enough to trick the scheduler. So I'm wondering if you've looked into that at all. Or...
Mm-hmm. For the TPCH, in this case, we actually leave the process information out there. We didn't remove it. But if you remove it, like in that case, the process information just cannot pass along with the request to the data server, that's the time when the scheduler will show its advantage.
So in here, it's running in a VM.
Uh-huh.
Did you try running it just on bare metal with no VM?
We do on the VM.
Right.
Yeah, in all this case, in a VM. So the process, yeah, yeah, in this case, the process information is not, yeah, is actually not available. Yeah.
Thanks.